Journalist Adam Leif Gullner is, well, shall we say, engaged by fruits. The peach and the apple are not even in the running for Gullner. In his book, The Fruit Hunters, a story of nature, adventure, commerce, and obsession, he makes eating exotic fruit sound like discovering an alternative universe and the reason for being. Adam, welcome.
Well, thank you for having me.
You know, Adam, you say something in the beginning of the book about the intense connection between fruits and humans. I mean, do you think this connection is different than between us and other foods?
Well, I think that the connection between humans and fruits is a particularly intense one because it's a sort of two-way relationship where fruits depend on humans just as much as humans depend on fruits, and both parties want the same thing, which is survival. So let me illustrate. Fruits allowed humans to evolve, to become humans. Without fruits, without this immense diversity of flowering plants and fruits, we would still be nocturnal insectivores gnawing on roaches in the moonlit treetops.
What an interesting theory.
Yeah, that's what one biologist put forward as a theory for humankind's evolution. But on the other hand, by that exact same token, fruits need humans to disperse them. Humans act as seed dispersal agents. Hmm. So fruits have evolved this way of making us desire them so that we will then further their reach. So that is part of the complex two-way relationship between fruits and humans.
One of the things that becomes so obvious in the book, practically from the first page, is, first of all, your fascination with the subject. But the other thing is fruits that we've never dreamed of. I was so struck by things that, I mean, I worked in food for 30 years. And I never heard of some of these things. Could you talk about some of the wildest fruits that you've known? You mentioned one, for instance, that was a turning point for you.
Well, one of the fruits that really changed my life, and there were many of them, but one of the great turning points in my life was encountering something called a dragon fruit. Now, I had already been to Brazil where I came across all sorts of wonderful fruits, whether it was something called a jambo, which looks kind of like a pear, a purple lilac pear, but mm-hmm. biting into it, it tastes like this refreshingly sweet styrofoam. And there had also been this thing called an abiu that looked like a lemon, but it was filled with this gummy, translucent interior, and it tasted like creme caramel from a French bistro. Mm. So in Brazil, I'd become initially fascinated, and then I came back home to Montreal, Canada, where I live, and I had a cocktail party, and I invited some friends, and I told everybody that they had to bring a special fruit. Now, nobody showed up with anything except for one friend shortly after midnight who arrived bearing this ostrich egg-sized flaming pink object covered in orange-green flaps and a mane of dead flower petals. Huh. And it looked like something from outer space. And I remember he sliced it open and it had this beautiful white flesh dotted with little small black seeds as inconspicuous as a kiwi's. And it was, of course, a dragon fruit.
Oh, my. What did it taste like?
It was very subtle. It's you know, one of the great challenges and one of the great delights for a fruit writer is to attempt to communicate the taste of something. But this dragon fruit kind of tasted like, very subtly, like watermelon with a bit of Concord grape and some strawberry, but a very subtle flavor.
You talk about the fruitleggers, talking about these exotic fruits. What is a fruitlegger?
Okay, a fruitlegger is a word for somebody who smuggles fruits across borders. Fruits, many of these fruits that I've described are unavailable in the United States. Mm-hmm. And there are many, many, many more fruits that are in the book that you just can't get in your local supermarket. And some of the people that I encountered are people who are so kind of passionate about the objects of their desire that they're willing to smuggle in order to get them home. So those are the fruitleggers.
And there's real concern because along with the fruits can come bugs that can have a negative influence on agriculture in our country or in other countries, right?
Absolutely. The fruits from the tropics or even from other temperate countries could arrive harboring fruit flies and other pests that could do damage to domestic crops. So for that reason, there are many rather stringent phytosanitary concerns that keep mm-hmm. these fruits out because of the potential harm.
I'm just looking at a list I made as I was reading the book. The California Avocado Commandos, the Corsica Kiwi Mafia, the International White Collar Fruit Criminals. This is another dimension of fruit being taken over borders.
Absolutely. There is an interesting relationship between fruit production and organized crime. And one of the reasons that that exists is that fruit is one of the last all-cash businesses. So all fruit transactions at the wholesale level are conducted with cash only. So when you go to, let's say, the Hunts Point Terminal Market outside of New York City, mm-hmm. where the entire island of Manhattan gets its fruits, it's all cash. And so for that reason, whether it's organized crime, whether it's mob ties or mafia connections to certain fruit distribution networks, or whether it's drug smugglers who actually use fruits as a way of bringing in contraband narcotics, there is this incredibly bizarre and sometimes dark relationship between fruits and crime.
And you talk about also the original golden delicious apple tree is actually locked in a cage, protecting seed banks, that kind of thing.
Yeah, there's lots of white-collar fruit crime. Intellectual property abuses are rampant in the fruit world, where somebody will market a certain type of fruit and say that it's something else. A classic example of this would be a fruit called the pluot, which has risen to prominence over the past decade. It's a plum-apricot hybrid, very delicious. And one day, the hybridizer who invented the pluot was walking through his fields with another marketer, and he said, I'm going to call this one the dinosaur egg, because it really looked like kind of speckled dinosaur egg. And the other grower said, oh, man, I'm trademarking that. He didn't say it, but he did go out and he trademarked it and he stole the name. And it's sort of one of those many examples of how IP issues are very sensitive in the fruit world.
Adam, absolutely fascinating. Thank you.
Thank you.
Journalist Adam Leith-Gollner is author of The Fruit Hunters, the story of nature, adventure, commerce, and obsession. Now, although after dragon fruit, the simple raspberry may seem a tad ordinary, you have got to try this recipe from our book, How to Eat Supper. It was the creation of the late Southern cook Edna Lewis, and it is so utterly simple, it's hard to believe how fine it makes those berries. You can find Edna Lewis's sugared raspberries on the website, splendidtable.org.